Thanks for joining. And if you'd like coming in at some point with a comment, you're welcome to do so. This next one here is, well, before we go any further, any additional stations, this next one here is about a ancient ancestor of ours, Homo naledi, and it was showing something, the fossil record was showing something that they thought only modern humans were doing, but that's now been shown as being false. If you'd like to join us, you have a comment, come on in. And this next one about Homo naledi fossils show an all-female burial site for a non-modern human species.
Not sure, because I wasn't here before it started. But yeah, I did get that last part over after the fact. But yeah, we've got Mark as well. He'd also like to come on in. He's pretty much next door neighbor, next country, really, like, you know. I'm here with Mark. Go ahead.
In the middle of a net.
That's all right. It'd be quick, don't worry.
This is VA3K. Not to worry. And I think you mentioned about Mars there too. And that last topic I was talking about, was giving a little bit of information about how planets might be seeding each other for life's development. All right, let's move on to this next one here. As I mentioned, Homo naledi, a fossil, show an all-female burial site for a non-human species. And this is a very, very ancient relative of modern Homo sapiens. And this is a new study. It was published in Cell, and it showed that proteins extracted from H. naledi's teeth did not come from males. No male markers were found. And every test showed the samples to be a female, with the exception of possibly one male with maybe a mutated or deleted sex-like gene. This may turn out to be the first known sex-specific burial site made by non-human species. Just dropping. The first H. naledi fossils extracted from a cave in 2013 showed that there was barely any difference in size between individuals, or even physical differences typically seen between males and females of the same species. And H. naledi lived between 235,000 and 241,000 years ago, had small brains, ape-like shoulders, and similar hands and lower limbs to humans. And although DNA degrades quickly in warm climates, proteins in tooth enamel survive much longer, and that helps protect biological information for millions, possibly even millions of years. And should this cave system, referred to as the Rising Cave System, prove to be reserved exclusively for females, it would indicate a symbolic mortuary practice once thought unique to modern humans. Or there's another take on this as well, that the population of H. naledi may have been a highly isolated population where a male-specific melanogen, Y gene, mutated or was deleted entirely, which has been seen, although it's been seen rarely in some modern human populations. This means that that males might have been present, but their teeth held no detectable male signature. And this is VA3CAX, and any stations out there, if you'd like to join us, if you have a comment, come on in. And the next one is about ancient ancestors might have developed communication very fast. And I thought I'd include this this week, Tom was talking last week about prairie dogs and how they communicate, and language, and evolution of language with the prairie dogs. So I thought this might fit in here tonight, a bit of a adjunct to last week's discussion. If you'd like to join us, if you have a comment, come on in, and then we'll move into this next one. And no one can really pinpoint when language first emerged, and language, it doesn't fossilize. The most common indicator of emergent language comes from thumb-sized pieces of material engraved with regular geometric shapes, as well as some really spectacular cave paintings. Whoever created them most likely had language. And these type of symbols appeared approximately 100,000 years ago, and quite suddenly, they just seemed to pop into existence. Prior to that, archaeological records show no new tools or documentation of new behaviors. Suddenly, within a few millennia, all types of new activities started up, including stunning cave art. In other words, within a relatively short time, all kinds of symbolic activity started. Dropping.
Yeah, Mark, I'm not
what
saying
started all
there,
this? Well, researchers looked at the genetics, and there were 3,000 genes believed to be responsible for cognition in the primate lineage. There's a paper published February 26th in the journal Nature Scientific Report showed that about 400,000 years ago, 30 of these genes over and over again changed the way they coded proteins. This then must have occurred in our common ancestor around 400,000 years ago. These changes dramatically increased the size of our ancestor's brain, but also the number of synapses. And the brain then became capable of forming far more connections along its different parts. This explosion of synapses resulted in a huge cognitive evolution. Stopping.
And Mark, this is
exclusively that this led to language, but it does suggest that the ability to think symbolically and by use language could be a byproduct of an efficiently networked brain. Sophisticated and rapid neural processing is what is needed for language, and changes in connectivity may have been what made that possible. Once these connections were in place, language developed very, very fast. For instance, prior to 1970, Nicaragua, Nicaragua example here, didn't have any sign language. Kids that were deaf were not sent to school and had little to no contact with other deaf people. In the early 1980s, the government opened schools for deaf children. In the schools, they didn't teach sign language, but that didn't prevent the kids from communicating. Spending time together, the students spontaneously invented a fully grammatical sign language, which is still used in Nicaragua. And this is according to the Language Acquisition and Development Research Laboratory. So it shows how fast that, if you look at that data, if you want to go and do a Google search online, look that up, you'll find it very interesting how fast a particular language, although it's sign language, how fast that developed.
W3DEC.
In that last station, if you come in one more time, I think I heard W3 was a DEC.
This is W3DEC. Good evening.
Okay, I got that time. I had one letter wrong in your call sign. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Checking in, or do you have a comment too? All right, unless there are any other check-ins or comments, then we'll head into another one here. And Chernobyl, the Chernobyl exclusion zone. This was from last week. I thought I presented again this week. The Chernobyl exclusion zone showed that wildlife acted differently during the Russian invasion. And naturally, think, well, sure, with all the bombing, but there's a little bit more to it than that. If you'd like to join us, if you have a comment, come on in, then we'll do this one. Well, camera traps show that after the invasion, mammals inside the exclusion zone spent less time moving around at night, and the changes were discovered by comparing video footage gathered from the early months of 2022, the Russian invasion, with that of footage from the same time of a year ago. So they're doing a comparison, and they can see there was the animals were starting to act differently at different times of the day. The findings were published in the journal Science, June 18th. And the study covered the Chernobyl exclusion zone, which is approximately 1,000 miles square, or 2,600 square kilometers. And over the decades, there's been little human activity, but wildlife managed to flourish, which transformed the area into a natural laboratory for studying ecosystems recovering and the behavior of species. One of the things they discovered there, too, is there's some what appear to be some genetic mutations that are making the animals a little bit more resistant or resilient to radiation. To investigate the impact on wildlife, researchers looked at the camera traps already operating from 2020 to 2022. And the image and footage showed responses from 11 wild mammal species and their behavioral changes during times of heavy fighting. Roe deer, red deer, moose, red fox that became less active during the occupation than before a fight started, especially at night. And the study shows how warfare impact and ripple through ecosystems and how animals can adapt to it. So a lot of these animals that would have been present during the day, they started changing their activities for specific times that you maybe necessarily wouldn't see them. And this is EA3KX, Ken here, Science and TechNet, and I'm transmitting from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. There are stations out there. If you'd like to join us, come on in. Or if you'd like to join us and you have a comment, come on in with that too. And this next one here is about scientists finding a neutrino factory powered by stars. And this was from the National Institutes of Natural Science. All right, National Institutes of Natural Sciences, this report was generated from. And there's a galaxy, it is given the name Shadow Blaster, might have just shown scientists a surprising source of cosmic neutrinos. And they were expecting the source to be from a supermassive black hole, but instead found extreme star formation. And this could mean that a significant fraction of the universe of high-energy neutrinos come from dust-filled starburst galaxies. Stop it. Neutrinos, they're one of the most head-scratching particles known to the science. They pass through space and matter. They're barely interacting with anything at all. They may occasionally bump into a molecule or atom going through some matter, but very little interaction otherwise. And there are a number of sources known that produce neutrinos, including a few galaxies, but these are not enough to account for the huge population of high-energy neutrinos found so far. Of course, the sun produces neutrinos, too. Astronomy. And the sun was an interesting study, too, about neutrinos, because at one point in time, all the calculations, et cetera, showed that there should be a specific number of electron neutrinos coming from the sun, but when scientists started looking for them, they weren't finding the numbers that should correspond with calculations. But it was later on found that as neutrinos travel, they start to oscillate. As they start to oscillate, they start going into, turning into different flavors of neutrinos, different types of neutrinos. So